Good morning, and welcome to the Xerox Corporation fourth quarter 2016 earnings release conference call hosted by Jeff Jacobson, Chief Executive Officer. He is joined by Bill Osborne, Chief Financial Officer. During this call, Xerox executives will refer to slides that are available on the web at www.xerox.com/investor. At the request of Xerox Corporation, today's conference call is being recorded. Other recording and/or rebroadcasting of this call are prohibited without the express permission of Xerox. After the presentation, there will be a question and answer session. To ask your questions at that time, please press star one at any time during this call. You can withdraw your question by pressing the pound key. Xerox's reported results for the fourth quarter and full year 2016 reflect only the continuing operations of Xerox. The financial results for the BPO business, once the information has been finalized, will be reported in discontinued operations in Xerox's 2016 Form 10-K report and will not be discussed during this call. During this conference call, Xerox executives will make comments that contain forward-looking statements, which by their nature address matters that are in the future and are uncertain. Actual future financial results may be materially different than those expressed herein. At this time, I would like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Jacobson. Mr. Jacobson, you may begin.
Good morning, and welcome to Xerox's fourth quarter 2016 earnings conference call. During today's call, we will provide an update on our financial progress in the fourth quarter, as well as our expectations for 2017. On January 1st, Xerox began a new chapter, building on our heritage of innovation and customer centricity while evolving to meet the changing dynamics of the market and the workplace. The new Xerox will capitalize on our market leadership positions and innovation capabilities to deliver more value to our customers and drive revenue improvements over time. The 35,000-plus members of Team Xerox are excited about the opportunities ahead of us. Our customers are welcoming and encouraged by our renewed focus on what we do best, helping them communicate and work more effectively. I feel really good about our business, our strategy, our leadership team, and how we are positioned for the future. We have a strong, attractive business model. We participate in an $85 billion market and have leadership positions in key segments. Our business is 75% post-sale based, which provides great stability. We have loyal and long-standing relationships with our current customers, and we are adding to our client roster as we cultivate relationships with new customers. We continue to be relentless on cost and productivity initiatives, and we are very good at operating this business. From 2013 through 2015, we delivered $300 million-$350 million of productivity each year. With our strategic transformation program, we are driving for more transformative change that will bring even greater productivity, and we are on track to deliver an annual average of at least $500 million of cost savings from 2016 to 2018. We are disciplined in our approach, and our ability to deliver productivity will mitigate the impact of revenue declines until we change our revenue trajectory. Our productivity efforts are providing a solid financial foundation to support strong cash generation, margin expansion, and the ability to reinvest in the business. The market we play in has both growing and declining areas. The growth opportunities range from low single digit to double digits, and we have a concrete plan to capture these opportunities in our strategic growth areas. These areas include, first, document outsourcing, especially managed print services in the small and medium business, or SMB market. Our emphasis will be on the M of SMB. Second, entry products, where pages are moving from single-function A4 size printers to higher value A4 multifunction printers, where we are better positioned. Finally, the production cut sheet color and emerging production inkjet markets, an area where we are historically strong and are making investments in the newer technologies. To pursue these opportunities, we have realigned our go-to-market model, and we are expanding our channels to increase our reach and strengthen our relationships with our customers, and we're building on successful product launches in 2016 to expand our portfolio and taking things to a greater level in 2017 with the largest product launch in the history of Xerox. Finally, we are a company that continues to focus on delivering attractive shareholder returns. That is at the core of our mission. We know investors and shareholders expect that, and it is also important for employees and customers who want to be associated with a vibrant, successful, and innovative business. We have the strategies to get there. We also have the foundation of an investment-grade credit profile and a strong free cash flow that supports investment in the business as well as attractive returns to shareholders. I am confident we are well positioned for success in the coming years, and our accomplishments in 2016 provide examples of our ability to deliver. Let me share with you a few highlights. As you know, on December 31st, 2016, we successfully completed the spinoff of the business process services business, which is now an independent company named Conduit Incorporated. This was a significant undertaking on a very short timeline. The organization was heavily involved in completing the necessary work of separating vendor, partner, and customer contracts, implementing over 160 information technology projects, and managing the transfer of several thousand employees between entities. My thanks to all those involved. They worked tirelessly and late at night and many weekends to complete the transaction as planned. In addition to completing the separation, we also initiated our strategic transformation program. I'm very pleased with the progress made during the first year of the program. We exceeded our 2016 target by delivering $550 million in gross savings. To ensure we stay on track, we have embedded a rigorous process within our operations to identify, implement, and track initiatives. I'm personally involved, as is the full executive team. The entire organization is engaged and focused on delivering on their commitments. Just as important as the financial impact of the program are the changes we are making to the way we work. We're simplifying, standardizing, and automating processes throughout the company. Here are a few examples. In our service delivery operations, we are advancing the use of automation, including marked increases in the usage of automation, supplies replenishment, and remote solve, which enables us to resolve break-fix issues on our products without dispatching a technician to customer locations. In our sales operations, we are enabling better pricing and sales tools, including a digital deal scoring tool to prescribe optimal pricing recommendations. And within our supply chain organization, we have further globalized our operations from regionally and functionally siloed organizations to a global organization, and we made progress consolidating our warehousing footprint. As we prepared to launch the new Xerox, we designed and implemented a streamlined operating model, simplifying our go-to-market approach. By creating global processes and deploying them at the local or country level, we will take advantage of our global scale while strengthening our relationships with customers in our local geographies. We also delayered the organization to expedite decision-making. We have pulled teams together to improve the return on our investments. Combining research, development, engineering resources will accelerate the process of moving from innovation to product. And uniting our business groups and sales support functions will ensure we have the right products delivered through optimal channels using the most efficient processes to drive revenue improvements. We have put in place a high-caliber leadership team that combines seasoned Xerox veterans such as Hervé Tesler, President of International Operations, Chief Commercial Officer Kevin Warren, Chief Delivery Officer Yahia Mati, and our Chief Technology Officer Steve Hoover, who's formerly the CEO of Park. With talented external hires, including our CFO Bill Osborne, our General Counsel Sarah McConnell, and our Chief Strategy and Marketing Officer Farouk Muzaffar, and two others, Mike Feldman, President of North America Operations, and Daryl Ford, our Chief Human Resources Officer, who, like me, joined the company within the last 5 years. We are an energized team committed to our strategy and focused on driving strong results. In 2016, we continued to apply our innovation capabilities to strengthen our portfolio and bring additional value to our customers. In the production area, we added to our high-end portfolio by bringing two new inkjet presses to market, the Cutsheet Brenva HD and the continuous feed Trivor 2400, laying the groundwork for further expansion into the growing inkjet market. We were honored to receive two Intertech Technology Awards from the Printing Industries of America for our Versant Press and Metallic Inks. These awards honor the development of technologies which are predicted to have a major impact on the graphic communications and related industries. For the office, we introduced the Kinect Key-enabled iSeries multifunction printers, MFPs, which are equipped with ready-to-use apps to speed up paper-dependent business processes and make it easier for users to collaborate and work more effectively. Our Xerox App Gallery, an online portal where customers can select and download MFP resident apps, adds functionality, enhances convenience, and increases productivity. Buyer's Laboratory recognized the 2016 ConnectKey technology platform with its outstanding achievement in innovation honors. In document outsourcing, we were pleased that our efforts in managed print services were recognized once again, as we were named a market leader by all of the top industry analysts. In this strategic growth area, we brought automation solutions to market that simplify how our customers work so they can be faster, more efficient, and effective in the services they provide to their clients. For example, we introduced a workflow automation solution for retail banking that provides bank employees with a consolidated view of all content within a specific account, simplifying the process of onboarding a new client and improving customer satisfaction. In higher education, we have an automation solution to streamline the admissions process by automating the capture and routing of documents, increasing both the quality and the speed of the process. These are just a few examples of the value we are bringing to our customers as we extend the power of our technology into processes that bridge analog and digital workflows. Finally, I would be remiss if I did not mention all of the work that was done in 2016 to prepare for the largest product launch in our history, which is coming later this year. We will refresh our office portfolio by introducing a new technology platform and building on the successes of the iSeries approach to apps and workflows. With that, I will move to our fourth quarter results. The financial results we will review today are those of the continuing operations of the new Xerox. In the fourth quarter, we delivered adjusted earnings of 25 cents per share. Revenue of $2.7 billion was down 7% year over year, or 5% on a constant currency basis. While post-sale revenue declines were stable at down 3%, equipment revenue was soft, somewhat owing to the timing of product launches, but this is an area of focus to drive better results. This is why pursuit of our strategic growth areas is so important and will be featured in our commentary going forward as we drive to improve our revenue trajectory over time. Adjusted operating margin was strong at 14%, up 70 basis points from the previous year, driven by our strategic transformation initiatives. So a very good result that helped offset revenue declines and allowed us to enhance operating margins. For the full year, our margin was 12.5%, at the top of the range we expected. We delivered seasonally strong cash flow from operations of $462 million, and we ended the year with a cash balance of $2.2 billion. We plan to use $1 billion of cash for the repayment of maturing senior notes in the first quarter of 2017. Bill will provide additional color when he walks through our cash flow in more detail. Overall, our results demonstrated continued progress in our productivity and cost savings initiatives and our ability to generate strong cash flows as we work to change the trajectory of our revenue. I'll now turn the call over to our CFO, Bill Osborne. Bill joined Xerox on December 5th from Time Warner Cable, where his 13-year career culminated with him serving as co-CFO. Previously, Bill spent 14 years at PricewaterhouseCoopers. Bill?
Thanks, Jeff, for the introduction. Glad to be here and excited to join Xerox at this time when there is such great opportunity before us. To me, it's simple. We have a strong market position and brand, margin support and investment room from our strategic transformation, along with strategies with reasonable expectations to improve the revenue trajectory over time, which are supported by our announced product launch. In the same breath, I'd say we've got lots of work to do to execute on the plan and build a track record of consistent delivery. I've been extremely pleased to find such a strong finance and accounting team here at Xerox, and which meshes well with my background, which is rooted in public accounting. Together, my team and I are committed to driving continued financial rigor and clarity in reporting. Before I walk through the Q4 numbers, it's important to mention again that Conduent's financials are not included in our continuing operations results, and as stated earlier, their results will be included in our discontinued operations when we file our 10-K at the end of February. So I do not plan to comment on Conduent results. So let's get started. Our adjusted results, as a reminder, exclude from an EPS perspective the following. Non-service retirement-related costs, as these obligations are predominantly legacy in nature, and the costs can be significantly impacted by changes in debt and equity markets, so not operational in nature. Restructuring and related costs, as these have significant variability and aren't reflective of future operating performance, as they are expected to yield future benefits. And lastly, amortization of intangibles, as these are non-cash and associated with past acquisition activity. Revenue of over $2.7 billion, as Jeff described, was down 7.2% at actual currency and 5% at constant currency. When we look at equipment and annuity, which includes contracted outsourcing services, equipment maintenance services, consumable supplies and financing, amongst other elements, the equipment decline was greater, down 10.1% at constant currency, while annuity post-sale revenues declined 3.2% at constant currency and was consistent with the full-year results. Equipment is the more transactional revenue stream, and the higher decline reflected two main drivers. First, timing of product launches in the workplace office product area. As announced at our December Analyst Day, we'll be launching 29 new A3 and A4 products in this product segment, predominantly beginning in Q2, so we're starting to see a bit of a slowdown in sales in anticipation of the product launch. Second, high-end equipment revenue was weaker, reflecting a mixdown as entry production products drove the unit growth, while higher-end sales were lower, driven by iGen. From a geographic perspective, Europe was broadly weaker. U.S. was overall stable, and developing markets improved. Largely offsetting the decline in revenue was a higher margin, as adjusted operating profit was down only $9 million on a revenue decline of $212 million. Gross margin improved and spend was lower in both the selling, administration, and general expenses and R&D areas. Our adjusted operating margin, in which we're including equity income from our 25% interest in Fuji Xerox on the profit side to better align with what we previously referenced as segment margin, was 14% in the quarter, up 70 basis points year over year, with the absolute strength reflecting the normal Q4 seasonality and the year-over-year improvement driven by the cost savings we're seeing from our strategic transformation program. Offsetting the good news in operating margin was other expenses net, which was higher year-over-year by $25 million, as Q4 2015 benefited from gains on the sale of surplus property. Tax rate in the quarter was 21.1% on an adjusted basis, which was lower by about a point year over year, driven by a higher foreign tax credit benefit in 2016. To round things out, adjusted EPS from continuing operations was 25 cents for New Xerox, which compares to 27 cents in the prior year, and GAAP EPS was 17 cents. These are difficult numbers to give context to, as historical Xerox guidance was not on that basis, as it included Conduent. Overall, I would summarize quarter four as mixed, improvements in margins offsetting revenue declines and resulting in continued solid cash flows from operations, as I will discuss shortly. As we think about New Xerox following the spinoff, I'd like to take some time to cover the trends we're seeing in the business, as well as the key metrics that drive the business. Starting with a high-level view of revenue and margin trends. Total revenue in 2016 was down 4.3% at constant currency, modestly better than the 4.6% in 2015. It is fair to say that declining revenue trends in the business have been generally consistent in recent years. As a leader in this market, we need to improve upon these trends, which is why the separation and our ability now to direct all of our resources towards the digital printing and document outsourcing business, as well as the strategic transformation program, are such key enablers to helping improve the top-line trajectory. It is important to remember that any meaningful improvement in recent trends will take time, as we should start to see some equipment benefit in the second half of 2017 with resulting post-sale benefits in 2018 and beyond. We're seeing progress on our transformation and productivity initiatives. As shown on the previous slide, adjusted operating margin in Q4 was 14%, and for the year, we ended with a 12.5% margin, which was at the high end of the range we gave at the December investor conference. There is seasonality in the margin, so we expect Q1 will naturally dip down to below our full-year guidance range, especially when we factor in the investments we're making in the launch of our new products, as well as currency, which I'll now spend a moment on. Currency is a variable to both revenue growth and margin. The strong dollar over the past couple of years has pressured revenue, and we expect about 2 points of unfavorable translation currency in 2017, which will impact profit by approximately $20 million. The strengthening yen relative to other currencies has also been an increasing headwind over the past couple of years, given the product and supplies we source from our partner, Fuji Xerox. We anticipate this headwind will continue into 2017 with approximately 100 basis points or $100 million of additional margin pressure at recent rates, and factoring in our hedging and currency risk sharing with Fuji Xerox. So in total, we're looking at about $120 million negative pre-tax profit impact from currency at recent rates. Turning now to our key performance metrics. The metrics on this slide are a mix of those we've traditionally provided around installs and signings, as well as some new metrics around strategic growth areas and transformation that align to what we discussed at our December investor conference. As we move into 2017, we will evolve our metrics reporting with the objective of providing transparency into the trends in our key business drivers. As Jeff referenced, our strategic growth areas comprise managed print services and workflow automation, a subset of document outsourcing, A4 multifunction printers and production color, and our areas where the overall market is expanding. We have growth initiatives to go after each of these areas that leverage our managed print services leadership, our high-end strength, as well as the opportunity to further penetrate the SMB market. For full year 2016, strategic growth area revenue comprised 38% of total revenue, which was a 2-point increase year over year. And overall strategic growth area revenue was up 2% at constant currency. As a percent of our total revenue, we expect to see an approximate 3-point increase annually as we roll out our growth initiatives. Turning to installs, as expected, color growth rates were stronger than black and white. Overall, Q4 was softer than the full year figures and followed the comments I made on equipment revenue. 2016 was a lighter product launch year in workplace, office, and as we've highlighted, 2017 is planned to be our largest product launch year in history, with most of our new products available by the end of the first half. So we are looking for improving trends as we move into the second half of 2017 and beyond. Document outsourcing signings, while at the highest level of the year, were lower than Q4 2015. And for the full year, signings were down 5% on a trailing 12-month basis at constant currency. Not as strong a close to the year as we would have liked. Overall, our pipeline is growing, but we are impacted by lower new business signings in 2016, driven in part by increased price discipline, but also by what we believe was insufficient new logo sales coverage and some A4 product gaps that will be resolved with our upcoming launch. As communicated at our December investor conference, part of our strategic growth area focus is managed print services. So we're taking actions and making investments in this area to drive improving signings trends as we move through 2017. Also, note that we don't capture the higher growth partner print service signings within our figures. The last progress area I'd like to cover is strategic transformation. This is a critical program to drive both expanding margins and enabling investments to improve the revenue trajectory. We gave a fair amount of detail at the investor conference on these areas of focus and initiatives, as well as our three-year targets that accumulate to over $1.5 billion in gross savings over 3 years. You can also see here how the three-year program savings break down by area. In terms of 2016 results, we exceeded our gross savings objective, and we are maintaining our objective of $600 million for 2017. There are headwinds related to the revenue declines, as well as currency that partially offset these savings, but net-net, we anticipate continued margin expansion for the full year in 2017, as I'll detail in a moment. We'll work to continue to refine our key performance metrics, and I look forward to updating you on our progress throughout the year. Another critical element to our business model is our cash flow, which I'll cover now. Operating cash generation coming from continuing operations in the quarter was $462 million and resulted in $1 billion for the year. Free cash flow was $423 million in Q4 and $880 million for the year. So strong results on both measures. Some of the key drivers of the continuing operations cash flow for the full year are as follows. Pre-tax income totaled $568 million. Adding back non-cash items, pre-tax income was about $1.3 billion. Other notable sources and uses included restructuring payments of $118 million, which was less than the charge in the P&L, a reflection of the lag between when charges are taken and payments are made. Pension contributions were $178 million and is an area like restructuring, which will be higher in 2017, as I will discuss in a moment. Working capital was a source in the quarter for normal seasonality, but overall a use for the year, driven by accounts payable related to both lower level of payables as well as timing. We see this as an area of improvement opportunity in full year 2017. And lastly, change in finance assets was a source for the year, reflecting less originations on lower financed equipment sales, as well as the dissipating drag from the finance receivable sales of a few years ago. Investing cash flows were a use of $59 million in Q4 and $146 million for the year, largely reflecting our CapEx spend, which was $39 million in the quarter and $138 million for the year. We are not presenting cash flows from financing as they are presented on a combined, continuing, and discontinued operations basis and are not meaningful on a new Xerox basis as financing activities were primarily related to the Conduent discontinued operations. Turning to our capital structure, there are a number of dynamics to cover, especially with the spinoff of Conduent. We ended Q4 with $6.3 billion of debt, which is lower than the $7.4 billion we reported at the end of Q3, as $1 billion earmarked for the term loan repayment that came due upon separation has gone to discontinued operations. Of our $6.3 billion in debt, $3.7 billion is allocated to financing debt, calculated by applying a 7-to-1 leverage to our customers' financing assets of $4.2 billion, which are comprised of $3.7 billion of finance receivables and $475 million of equipment on operating leases. This financing debt is adjusted out in one form or another by rating agencies when calculating our core leverage. As finance assets have come down over time, we have lowered our total debt to maintain our core leverage within our target range. The $2.6 billion remaining after backing out the financing debt is core debt. We show the pro forma core debt will be $1.6 billion and cash balance will be $1.4 billion, taking into account our plan to retire $1 billion of senior notes that are coming due in quarter one. As we communicated at our December investor conference, as a smaller, less diversified company, we will need to carry less core debt. Thus, this reduction, as well as further anticipated debt reductions in 2017, are targeted at maintaining our investment-grade credit profile and will give us more financial flexibility in the long run. I'll now take a moment to walk through our guidance for 2017. Beginning with revenue, we are guiding to mid-single-digit revenue declines at constant currency. Also, based on recent rates, we anticipate approximately 2 points of currency headwinds during 2017. We anticipate equipment sale revenue trends will improve as we move into the second half of 2017, as we begin to benefit from new product launches and our growth strategies. Although, due to the timing of the launches, the revenue impact of the new products will have a greater impact in 2018 and beyond. Also contemplated in our guidance are two specific headwinds, one related to the communication and marketing services, or CMS, business that came from business process outsourcing business, where a focus on exiting low-margin contracts is resulting in higher near-term revenue declines, and the second from our OEM business, which, as we highlighted at our Investor Day, has been declining at higher rates due to less volume from one of our major OEM customers. CMS in 2016 had about $225 million in revenues, and OEM had about $350 million in revenues, and we anticipate both will decline about 20%, which equates to over a point of impact to total revenue, which is about 60 basis points higher than the impact on the prior year. Moving on to operating margin, we are guiding to a range of 12.5% to 13.5% for the full year, an expansion from the 12.5% we reported in 2016, driven by strategic transformation cost savings, offsetting ongoing revenue declines, and the negative impact from currency that I highlighted earlier. Turning to EPS, on a GAAP basis, we are guiding to 44 to 52 cents of full-year earnings, and on an adjusted basis, 80 cents to 88 cents, which compares to 88 cents for full year 2016. Revenue declines, currency headwinds, and a higher tax rate are more than offsetting margin expansion and lower interest expense. Just as we expect improving equipment sale trends in the latter half of the year, we also expect improving trends in EPS as revenue declines lessen and cost transformation accelerates. We are not giving quarterly EPS guidance, as I believe we should be focused on the full year achievement. With that said, while Q1 has historically represented about 20% of full year EPS, we expect Q1 2017 results will be somewhat lighter given currency pressures and timing of our product launch. Should also note that our GAAP guidance assumes approximately $225 million in full year restructuring, of which $125 million is expected to be incurred in Q1. Finally, turning to cash flow, we had a very strong cash flow in 2016. As we communicated at the investor conference, we anticipate lower cash flow in 2017 and are guiding to a range of $700 million to $900 million of operating cash flow from continuing operations. The decline year over year primarily is driven by higher restructuring payments of $215 million and higher pension contributions of $350 million, partially offset by improvements in working capital. Note that the year over year, this assumes restructuring payments will increase by $100 million and pension contributions will increase by about $175 million. Before I hand it back to Jeff, I'd like to close by walking through our capital allocation plans. From a sources of cash perspective, we will be using both our 2017 operating cash flow as well as cash on the balance sheet to fund our cash uses. As noted on the previous slide, we expect operating cash flow from continuing operations in 2017 to be in the range of $700 million to $900 million. We will have some carryover separation payments of approximately $100 million that will come through operating cash flow from discontinued operations. We also highlighted that we have a pro forma cash balance after paying off the Q1 debt maturities of $1.4 billion. Which is about $400 million above what we are currently targeting as our 2017 ending cash balance. Thus, combining our expected operating cash flows with the available cash on the balance sheet, we'll have between $1 billion and $1.2 billion in cash available for capital allocation, which is planned as follows. We are anticipating and doing an additional $300 million in debt repayment to bring our leverage in line with our targets. As far as dividends, considering our annualized 25-cent common dividend and the preferred dividend, we anticipate paying $280 million in dividends during the year. We have a fairly light capital business model and plan on spending approximately $175 million on CapEx, which contemplates some incremental IT investment. And we're currently targeting approximately $100 million for M&A. Which leaves somewhere between $145 million and $345 million to be deployed opportunistically and according to our capital allocation priorities to maintain our investment grade credit profile by reducing debt and or pension liabilities, as well as investing in our business to drive higher shareholder returns. While return of capital is an important priority, given the attractive dividend yield we are intending to pay, we believe the best use of cash for 2017 is either to bolster our credit profile or fund growth, and thus do not plan for any share repurchases this year. It is important that we take the opportunity in 2017 to more efficiently structure our balance sheet and manage our business, which will enable greater investment and shareholder returns in the future. With that, let me hand it back to Jeff to wrap up prior to Q&A.
Thank you, Bill. We are a new Xerox, a company that is building on its long history of improving the way work gets done. We will bring the best of the legacy Xerox and combine it with a focused, streamlined, and simplified organization that more easily adapts to meet the needs of today's markets while delivering solid returns to our shareholders. In 2016, we laid the foundation for the future. The launch of our strategic transformation program will support strong cash generation, margin expansion, and the ability to reinvest in the business. We defined our strategy and have solid plans in place to capture opportunities in our strategic growth areas to change the trajectory of the company's top line and outperform the market over time. 2017 is all about execution. My team and I are singularly focused on the operational performance of the business to ensure we successfully execute upon our strategy and deliver on our commitments to our customers, our employees, and our shareholders. We will now open the line for questions. Jennifer?
Thanks, Jeff. Before we get to your questions for Jeff and Bill, let me point out that we have a number of supplemental slides at the end of our deck which provide more financial details to support today's presentation and complement our prepared remarks. For the Q&A, I would ask participants to limit follow-on and multi-part questions so we can get to everyone. At the end of our Q&A session, I will turn it back to Jeff for closing comments. Operator, please open the line for questions now.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star and then the one key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to move yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Our first question comes from the line of Matt Cabral of Goldman Sachs. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thank you. So on the equipment revenue, you touched on this a little bit in the prepared remarks, but it looks like the pace of decline accelerated to end the year. So I was wondering if you could just touch upon your view on the health of the industry at large and how much of the slowdown you think was Xerox-related given some of the upcoming product launches versus more of a market-wide slowdown that we're going through. And then kind of related to that, I noticed in the press release that you called out Europe as being particularly weak. Just wondering if you can expand a little bit on what you're seeing there.
Yeah, hey, Matt, how are you? This is Jeff. Thanks for the question. Yeah, so as Bill alluded to in his remarks and you mentioned, in terms of versus full year, our North American business was stable. The trends were very stable. Developing markets actually improved versus their trends, and we did have a worsening in Europe. As a matter of fact, it was probably, you know, where they were low single digits, they went to above the average in decline. And it was really due to a few things. The entry mid-sector was lower, really due to the advent of the new products we have. If you think about our European business, just a little less than 50% of the European business is our channel business. So they're preparing their supply chain right now for the new products coming in, so that was part of it. Also, if you were to go to last year in Europe, in the high end, we had the iGen 5 introduction in the second half of the year. Europe did a really great job with that. If you go back to Q4 of 2015, they had a very tough compare there. So we think it was that. The market overall has been relatively stable. You know, certainly in North America, it's been stable. Developing market, as I mentioned, relatively stable. We think in Europe, Brexit, you know, we hear a little bit about, did that have some of the uncertainty there? Could that have been part of the causal? But, you know, where we think that we're going to see the benefits now as we start rolling out the new products, and almost all of them will be in our supply chain in the second quarter of the year, which will start benefiting us in the second half of the year, we think we'll start seeing stabilization there for sure.
Got it. And then on the cost transformation program, obviously you're only a year into the plan, but you're already executing above the targets that you've laid out. Can you just talk about the levers that you have to potentially deliver savings beyond the $1.5 billion plan that's in place through 2018? And just thinking more philosophically about your approach, if you were to see some upside in your cost savings targets, how are you viewing the trade-off between using those to accelerate some of the reinvestments that you've talked about versus dropping those through to the bottom line and starting to show some operating leverage in the model?
Yeah, I'll hit the cost transformation first and then hand it over to Jeff about, you know, thoughts about additional cash available for other investments. You know, as we said in our prepared comments, we're very pleased with what our results were for 2016, exceeding the $500 million, you know, achieving $550 million. We've targeted $600 million. Despite overachieving last year, we still believe we can do $600 million for this year. The levers, you know, we described the various areas, but, you know, one of the levers is clearly, you know, restructuring, and we're purposely timing a significant part of our restructuring, $125 million of our planned $225 million for the full year in the first quarter, so we get, you know, more of the benefits within the year. So we said we're very committed, we're very pleased with our results, and, you know, still believe, you know, we can achieve $600 million in 2017.
Yeah, and Matt, just to supplement it, you know, we do have a very diligent process. We guided that we thought we'd get $500 million of gross productivity in 16. We were very aggressive. We were able to pull some things earlier, which got us to the 550. We're still sticking to the 600. In terms of how we're going to use it, you know, one of the things I want to emphasize is we have a very strong return of capital strategy, and every free dollar of free cash flow we have fights for the best return on investment. A big part of this strategy we have to remember as we rolled out our investor conference is that these cost productivity programs, we want to drop some to the bottom line. We want margin expansion, but it's also all about how do we change the revenue trajectory. You know, we're not pleased where we were at 3.9%, then 4.6%, and then last year 4.3%. This year, you heard our guidance for the year, but it's all about 18 and beyond. How do we begin to change that revenue trajectory?
Great. Thanks, Matt. Operator, next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Kulbinder Garshal of Credit Suisse. Your line is now open.
Thanks for the question. Just a couple of clarifications. On the revenue decline this year, you're saying mid-single digits, and then the currency impact's about 2 points. And so when I think of that, I think you're guiding for maybe a 7% revenue decline on a reported basis. Is that what we're thinking about now? And the reason why I mention it is that I think previously you'd said the revenue decline would be comparable in 2017 to what you saw in 16. So has there been any change in your visibility, your view on revenues for 17 over the last couple of months since the analyst meeting? That's my first question. And then also linked to that, it sounds like revenue year-on-year declines are worse in the first half and they get better as we get through the end of the year. And the final question I have is just on cost reduction. You keep saying that you're going to do more than $1.5 billion long-term in this program, in the strategic transformation program. Can you give us is there a point at which you will maybe inform us how much more that's going to be, and is it going to be materially more? Is it maybe $100 or $200 million only? If you can give us some sense in terms of how much more, given as you go through this, how much more you could potentially save. Many thanks.
Yeah, this is Bill. You were breaking up slightly, but I think we pretty much got your three questions. First of all, regarding the revenue guidance down mid-single digits, as background, there's lots of detailed analysis and build-up in coming to that. But when I take a step back and think about it at a high level and giving that guidance, you know, the company historically hasn't had a great track record meeting its constant currency revenue guidance. You also factor in, you know, the Q4 that we are down 5% on a constant currency basis, and that in 2017, the expectation is with the new product launches in the second quarter towards the latter part of the first half of the year that the improvement, relatively speaking, will be more in the back end of 2017. So that combined with, and specifically I mentioned in my prepared comments, two parts of our business, the OEM business and CMS, that have been declining in recent years at a much higher rate than the overall company as a whole, but even are accelerating year over year, that really add about 60 basis points in additional decline. So that 4.3% you were looking at last year is, you know, relatively speaking, you're starting at like 4.9%. All those things factor together, you know, like I said, there's a lot of detailed analysis also that underlies it, gets you to a mid-single digits as far as revenue guidance at constant currency with improvements in the latter half of the year versus the first half, which I think answers your second question, you know, first half versus second half. And, yes, we would expect better improvements or lesser declines in the second half versus the first half as a result of the new product launch. As far as the cost reduction,
yeah, and Clovinder, if I can, this is Jeff, I just want to supplement Bill. Also, one thing when you look at our revenue model, as you know as well as anyone, 75% of our revenue is annuity. It's been fairly stable. It declines of about 3%. One of the advantages we have of that 75% of annuity, about 62% of it are bundled contracts, which is different from a lot of the industry. So we have a lot of stability from that standpoint. We certainly don't rest upon it. So the real key for us is changing the trajectory in the equipment sale revenue, because if we can start showing improvements there, getting more machines in the field, burning more pages, that will even help the annuity even more, but obviously it'll bring down the drag of the equipment sale revenue. With regard to the costing, you know, we don't want to give 2018 guidance on costs. What we said at the investor conference, we would be at $1.5 billion plus. We feel very good that we got to 550. We feel equally as good that we're guiding to 6. It's not in the bank yet. We have to drive it very hard. It's a lot of heavy lifting. But when we achieve that, and if we can achieve that, we'll be at, let's call it $1.150 billion, and then we'd be able to update our guidance as we get to 2018.
Thank you. Operator,
thanks. Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Shannon Cross of Cross Research. Your line is now open.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first is just, Jeff, can you talk a bit about how you're thinking about accelerating growth or improving what's going on within the document outsourcing business? If you can talk about specifics, you know, how, I don't know, maybe some of the weaker signings is, you know, carrying forward right now, but just there was a mention, I think, in the script about walking away for some lower profit deals. So are you seeing more pricing pressure in this segment? Just any color you can give would be great. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Shannon. Yeah, so the comment about walking away from low pricing deals is probably more in Europe, where there were a couple of very large deals where we just said from a margin standpoint, not something as the leader we really wanted to participate in. When I look overall at our document outsourcing business, as you know, we're very well positioned here as the industry leader from a market share standpoint. If you took number 2 and 3, they just about equal our market share. Our pipeline actually is up. So, you know, the way I look at it, I said our growth was 1% in Q4. It was up 2% for the year. Our signings for the full year were down 5%. The renewals were up double digit. It was the new business signings that were down. Where we're going to attack that, and let me also add, in terms of the new business signings being down, if you think about it, we're really just reporting new business signings in the enterprise. For our Xerox partner print services, we don't report the signings there. So in the enterprise, it's a $6 billion managed print services market, growing about 2%. We have just a little under a 50% share there. So we would expect to see somewhat of a little slowing in new signings there. But to counter that, what we're doing is the new product launch will help us a lot. And let me, you know, touch on the new products. Why will that help us? We've always been the leader in A3. A4, from a cost standpoint, we perhaps were not as competitive as we could have been or should have been. From a functionality standpoint, these new products will have a tablet-based user interface. They'll be mobile-enabled, cloud-connected, app-centric, with benchmark security, which is so important to the market today. And there'll be fleet coherency between A4 and A3. So we think with those new products, and we are going to hire what we call new logo or new business hunters, who will do nothing but focus on that percentage of the business, the enterprise we don't have. And then if I just factor over to document outsourcing, where we have even a better opportunity for growth in the SMB market of managed print services. That's a $7 billion market growing at 7%, and our share is under 10% there. So if I just compare and contrast the shares we have in the enterprise versus the SMB, again, with the focus on the M, and we start putting the focus there, and we are growing, we did grow at 12%, that's where we're looking for the growth opportunities.
Okay, thank you. And then if you can talk a little bit about, you know, how you think about use of cash, and it was covered in the script to some extent, but I'm just curious, you know, if you're sitting, I don't know, 6 months from now or 9 months from now, and you've got a pile of cash, how are you thinking about it in terms of, you know, internal investment versus acquisition? Are there areas where you think you should be, you know, developing things internally and leveraging Xerox PARC versus, you know, opportunities to go out and buy, and then obviously balancing that against, you know, share repurchase, which I understand is not on the table this year, but then also debt pay down. You're going to end up with some cash. You clearly will have cash next year, net of the return program you put in place. So, you know, how do you as the CEO sort of balance these these opportunities?
Yeah, so perfect, Shannon. Thank you. So let me address it, and then Bill could certainly supplement it. But, you know, we distinctly and we were very purposeful for saying the 145 to 345. I wanted to keep, and the team wanted to keep, our powder dry right now. You know, I don't think it's any secret when you look at the percentage of cash we generated in this side of the house over the years that in a two-division structure, some of that certainly went over to the services side of the house. And what we did is we had a strategy to manage our business certainly for margin, for cash. We will continue to do that. We'll always do it. And we'll be prudent and judicious with any investments we make. But what we are going to look at investments to accelerate the trajectory in the top line. And again, revenue is very hard, as we all know. These things won't come quickly. But we're going to align it to the growth strategy, Shannon. So what can we do in document outsourcing? Is it professional services? What can we do in workflow automation? In the SMB channel, obviously we've had great success with global imaging. We'll continue to do that. We'll look at some of the same things in Europe. In the production side, from an inkjet standpoint, we know we have some work to do there, and we'll continue to make investments there. And, you know, as you saw in our recent Brother Dominic commercial about Set the Page Free, the technology today is not just about printing on paper, but what can we do in packaging? What can we do from a technology standpoint, printing on plastics, printed electronics? So we are going through that internal debate of what could we commercialize ourselves, which will obviously take more time. What can we do with partnerships, or what can we potentially do in M&A? So that's the way we're looking at it.
Thanks, Shannon. Operator, next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Paul Coster of J.P. Morgan. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thank you. I'll build a little bit on the questions that Shannon just asked. First of all, with the dividend, should we think of it as contingent on the cash flow each year, or are you in a position to commit to dividend growth, knowing that once the pension fund payments are out of the way, you'll be in a much more robust position from a free cash flow perspective?
As we've said in our prepared comments, as Jeff just went through, you know, we are clearly, return of capital is an important priority, whether from share repurchases and from a dividend perspective. And, you know, as we said at the investor conference, over time on an annual basis, you know, we would expect to be returning in one form or another greater than 50%. As far as committing to dividend growth versus share repurchases, you know, right now in the future, you know, we're not going to give guidance on that. But just know that we are committed as a company to returning on an annual basis greater than 50%.
Yeah. And again, as I said before, we do have a strong return of capital strategy, and every dollar fights for the ROI and is compared against the return of capital.
Got it. Okay. And then on the acquisition front, can you just talk to us a little bit about the philosophy, both in terms of accretion, market share gain, growth trajectory? What criteria are you using, please?
You know, a couple of things, just to supplement what Jeff was saying earlier. You know, first of all, our acquisitions will be in areas that we're clearly experienced with, that are close to our knitting, areas that we understand. And one of those areas historically has been in the GIS or Global Imaging Services area, where we buy multi-branded resellers and essentially convert them over to, you know, more of a mono-branded reseller being Xerox. And historically, we've had very good returns in that. We paid a multiple in the range of 1x revenue. And we look, you know, to the extent that they're the right opportunities in doing those type of acquisitions in 2017 and beyond, not only in the U.S., but internationally. And then as far as other types of acquisitions, you know, whether in more in the workflow automation, whether software technology types, you know, we would probably pay a higher multiple just depending upon the specifics of the potential deal.
Yeah. And, Paul, you know, we're looking for things that will get us into those markets where perhaps we can't address well today. So if you were to look at just production color, we say it's a $5 billion market growing at 5%. There's a market that's probably 12, 13 times that, that's called commercial offset print and packaging, where if we can have technologies or get into that space, that would help us a great deal.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jim Suva of Citigroup. Your line is now open.
Thank you very much, and thanks so much for the details. On your annual EPS guidance, you know, this is your guys' first opportunity to really come out and set a watermark and set your goals and lay it out. Yet I think one would be remiss if they don't realize the political and economic environment the past, you know, 30 to 60 days has been probably more uncertain than ever. So for your guidance, does it incorporate kind of a risk-adjusted weight of all that, or is it a stretch EPS goal? Is it conservative? How should we think about that as it's really you guys are setting up your reputation at risk here? Is it conservative? Is it prudent? Is it a risk? Is it how you see things? Because we're just trying to figure out how your company is guiding versus the old Xerox.
This is Bill. I'll start with that question. And you know, as you know, we gave a lot of detail in the prepared remarks and everything. But from a high level, what I think about is, you know, we came in at 88 cents on an adjusted EPS for 2016. When you factor in known differences up front, whether the lower interest expense, the higher effective tax rate, more current foreign currency headwinds, you effectively have a net 10 cents off of that 88, and you're starting at 78 cents. And then, you know, you look through just the various, you know, cost transformation initiatives to help fund, you know, potential future growth. And, you know, based upon our detailed analyses, you know, we believe that gets us, you know, a 2 to an additional 10 cents upside, which gets you to an 80 to 88 cents. So at a high level, that's the way we think about it. We think it's an appropriate and reasonable, you know, guidance range based upon what we know at this time. With that said, you know, just as I said in the prepared comments about Q1, you know, being, you know, 20% typically, but, you know, a little bit negative impacted this year by foreign currency and the timing of the product launch, the full year guidance is also dependent upon a successful product launch, both from a timing perspective and customer demand. But based upon everything we know now and our detailed analyses, we believe it's a reasonable range.
Yeah, and Jim, our leadership philosophy is if something were to get worse in the external markets, we're just going to do more and just go with the productivity even harder to make up for it. You know, when we started the year, we looked at the guidance originally months ago, we didn't know we were going to have $120 million of currency headwinds, and that's why you're seeing the productivity initiative so high.
Thank you very much for the details.
Thanks, Jim. Operator, next question.
Our next question comes from George Tong of Piper Jaffray. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks. Good morning. Going back to the transformation savings program, can you outline what the sources of upside were in your savings of $550 million in the year compared to your $500 million target, and how your views on 2017 savings have changed at the increment, acknowledging that you're for now sticking to your original $600 million savings target?
I'm sorry, George, we missed the last part. Could you repeat that, please? We just want to make sure we heard you right.
Yeah, just how your views on your 2017 savings have changed at the increment.
You know, it comes from a lot of different factors. But as I said, one of the big things is that, you know, we're clearly, first of all, last year the whole program started in the February timeframe. We have the benefit of being up and running, and it's starting as of the beginning. You know, it'll be the full year. But we also purposely are, you know, front-ending a lot of our restructuring initiatives and expect to get, you know, benefits within the year from a lot of that. So that will have an incremental impact, that alone.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, again, when you look at the delayering of the organization, we've gone from about 11 layers down to 7 layers. If you look at the things we've been doing in technical service, those things are starting to hit now. Obviously, as we discussed, we have $225 million restructuring. We're going to do a lot of that in the first quarter, $125 of the $225. So as Bill mentioned, you know, we have a head start versus last year. We've got runway. We've got wraparound benefits from 2016 flowing into 2017. And, you know, George, we're hitting it pretty hard.
Got it. That's helpful. And for your upcoming product launch, can you elaborate on your 2017 and 2018 timeline in terms of the cadence of when those products will come out and what the margin mix impact could be based on your mix of new products in entry, mid, and the high end?
Yeah, so the vast majority, almost all of them, George, should be in by into our supply chain. I'm going to underline into our supply chain by the end of the first half of the year. Then they obviously will start flowing into our reseller supply chains and to the direct users in the second half of the year. And that's why Bill commented we'll see the equipment sale revenue benefits year over year in the second half and the flow through of the post-sale in 2018. From a margin standpoint, as we all know in this industry, A4, obviously you mix down the entire industry. When you sell the A4, you lose money on the hardware, you make money in the post-sale. We've contemplated that mix in terms of the what we're doing from a strategic transformation on the cost side to offset that. Additionally, as we're selling more into the SMB markets, we would expect the margins there to be healthier than they would be in the enterprise. So net-net, we should be okay, and we've contemplated that in our guidance.
Thanks, George. Operator, I think we have time for one last question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Mark Moskowitz of Barclays. Your line is now open.
Yes, thanks. Good morning, and I appreciate the details and the crisp messaging today. Two questions, if I could, real quickly here. Can you remind us how we should think about the strategic growth initiatives in terms of how they compare to your legacy business from a cash flow perspective? Do you get better cash attach for these new initiatives, or do you have to sell more installs? And then secondly is more tactical. The conservatism around the first half of the year, I know you're not giving explicit guidance, but your guidance you did provide around the contribution for earnings for the first quarter, is that related to conservatism just post-split? I know it's two different companies, but HP Inc. kind of hit an air pocket when they kind of misread the channel replenishment post their split, a year and a half or so ago. Is there any sort of dynamic you're trying to brace for there, or is it just more of the aforementioned factors around EMEA and high-end versus low-end and the new product launches? Thank you.
Yeah, I'll address the second part of the question regarding conservatism. The comments regarding Q1 and the relative history being about 20% of the total and the headwinds, are what we're seeing is our best estimate right now. I think your question is getting to, is there any distractions as a result of the recent split? And really, we don't see any. We're not factoring any of that in, really, as far as the first quarter. It's really just what we're seeing as far as, our buildup and what sort of headwinds we see.
Yeah. And, Mark, we don't envision the margins or the cash being any different in our strategic growth areas. If you look at them, it's managed print services and workflow automation, where we've been operating the business for a long time, production color, where we're a leader, and certainly in the A4 MFPs. Those will be going into the channel where we've been working with, and as we said, the margins in the SMB business to some extent should be better than they are in the enterprise. So net-net, we should be okay.
Thanks, Mark. That's all the time we have for questions today. Thanks for your interest. Jeff, anything more to wrap up?
No, thanks, Jennifer, and thank you all for your questions. As I said earlier, we are a new Xerox, and we really are excited about the opportunities ahead of us. We have a well-defined strategy to pursue the growth areas of the market while we continue to advance our strategic transformation program. This combination will provide the headroom we need to enhance margins as we invest for growth to change the trajectory of our revenue. Our team is very focused, and we're confident in our ability to meet our commitments. We look forward to updating you on our progress, and I want to thank you all for joining our call today.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. That does conclude today's program. You may all disconnect. Everyone have a great day.